Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 4th, 2007. I'm Tom Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Harry Cooney will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, there is a Senate plan to limit amendments to the Farm Bill. The White House has threatened to veto a Democrat proposal on energy. And the CME Group is today considering changes to the corn and soybean contract specs. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December contract in the wheat pit at 9.13, up 14 cents for the day. That, of course, in Kansas City, July at 7.97 and three quarters, up 18 and three quarters. In Chicago, the wheat finished the December contract 20 cents higher at $8.75. The March at 8.94, up 17 and a quarter. In July, wheat at $7.74.5, up 17 and a half cents. December corn futures at $3.94, 8 higher. March contract up 7 and 3 quarters at 4.11 and 1 quarter. And the May futures at 4.21 and 3 quarters, up 7 and 3 quarters. December corn futures next year at 4.37.5, 6 cents higher on the afternoon. January bean meal, rather, at 10.91.5, up 12 and 3 quarters. Those are the soybeans. March contract at 11.09.5 for the beans, up 12 cents. And the May futures 11.18.5, up 12 and a quarter. November soybeans at 10.33 and a quarter finished 17 and three quarters higher on the afternoon. Now the bean meal, December contract at 295.50, up 5.40. January futures at 298.30, up 5.50 for the day. December bean oil at 45.50, up 8 cents. January futures at 45.93, up 13. Mercantile exchange numbers, live cattle, December contract 94.27.5, a nickel higher. February futures down 7.5 cents at 96.30. January feeder cattle at 107, and they're a dollar and a nickel lower. March contract at 108, 2.5, down 77.5 cents. December lean hog futures at 54.30, down 40. February futures at 60.32.5, down 90. And the April contract in the lean hogs, a dollar lower at 65.95. We'll take a complete look at the settlement prices, the highs and lows in our settlements after we finish up our conversation about what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange in a few moments. Taking a look at the outside markets, crude oil futures, January contract at $88.32 a barrel. During the 2 o'clock hour, down 99 cents for the day. The February futures down 89 at 88.15.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is not Wayne Nelson, but his office mate, John Hester. Wayne is out for the afternoon. John agreed to join us this afternoon and fill in for Wayne. Good afternoon to you, John.
Good afternoon to you.
Tell me what you've seen in the marketplace and how it differs this year than in past years.
This year we've just had, a lot of uncertainty on planted acreage and the corn and the beans, and there's the demand worldwide and in the United States has been large enough that, you know, there's a tug of war between wheat, corn, and beans on the acreage shifts. If one commodity gets too far out of line with the other, then the other one has to rally to hold on to what acres it is anticipated having. I haven't seen anything for sure on the winter wheat that was planted, but I got to think that the winter wheat planted acreage will be about as large as it's been in a number of years, and I guess we'll get that report in January the 9th or 11th, whenever the next government report comes out.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the acreage battle that has ensued and how you think it's taken place in the farm fields there around New Market, Indiana.
I really don't foresee much of an acreage shift this coming year. I would say this past year, let me back up a second.
Mm-hmm.
The past year we probably had farmers shift maybe 10% to corn from beans. They were a little stronger beans than they had been, you know, and maybe not the the big farmers that farm several thousand acres, but, you know, the smaller farmers that farm 500 to 1,000 acres, I think some of them shifted, you know, maybe from 50-50 to, you know, maybe two-thirds to one-third. The big boys, I think some of them shifted some, but, you know, I'd say 10%, 15% shift was about as acreage was about, would about catch everything. And I have noticed around here that there's been a lot of anhydrous put on corn stalks this fall.
That's an interesting observation. Does it bear out with the numbers that you saw when they came in on crop insurance, that the primary shift happened with the smaller producers? And I guess my thought is that when we think about those types of shift in production, we think most of the time about the livestock producers who are able to jump in and jump out if they're small, but if they're large, they simply stay in
right
on the marginal side. And we really hadn't thought very much about that happening with grains and oil seeds. But maybe the numbers from the crop insurance bear out what you just told us?
I think so. I mean, we could, you know, insure the corn crop for such a high price last year that, you know, and that warranted maybe planting some more corn acres. And, you know, and the way it turned out, corn price rallied, and it really turned out to be a pretty good deal.
Hmm.
I suspect that, I don't know exactly what the numbers would pan out, but I suspect the guy made probably $50 more an acre growing corn last year than he did beans. Now, next year probably won't be that because the input costs are going to be so much higher.
Are producers enticed, you think, by no beans at $10.33, the potential for them to go to $11?
I think so. And, you know, I've heard a lot of coffee shop rumblings that you know, guys are gone. Some people are thinking about shifting back and planting some more beans. I mean, you know, these are the smaller people again. Just maybe for the, you know, input cost. You can plant beans for about half what it costs to plant corn.
Hmm. Do you have an idea in Indiana what the acreage, how the acreage split might be, or maybe in your area, how the acreage divvies up and how much of it is controlled by what you would consider a smaller producer in that 800 to 500 range, I suppose, as opposed to those that would be above that?
I would guess probably 50% of the farmers in Montgomery County are of the maybe 60% or 1,000 acres and smaller. I mean, that's just off the cuff. I don't know. I mean, we have about four large producers in the county, but they, you know, cover more than one county also.
Of course. So this, well, I guess what I'm getting at is you can, on the marginal side, in terms of how easy it is for them to move acres around, if you've got more than half of the acreage in that coverage area, and you said farmers, but I'm going to assume they have more than half of the acreage in Montgomery County as well.
Right.
That you can shift a lot of acres awfully quickly, and that may be one of the things that the trade didn't recognize as we went into the last season.
I think that's probably true. You know, like I say, I think last year there was probably 10 to 15% acreage shift from beans to corn in my area, what I know of. And, you know, you multiply 10 or 15% times, 70 million projected corn acres or 75 million projected corn acres, you know, that's a huge number. You know, then you get your extra 8 to 10 million corn acres. And I think the deterring factor this year, and it may not be as much as I think so, is going to be the high input costs. I think there'll be a shift back to from beans to corn, or from corn to beans.
And would that, you think, be one of the rallying reasons for Dease corn to be up 8 on the nearby and 6 cents higher on the deferred today?
I think that's probably part of it. And also, there was two little glitches on snippets on the news this morning that came out. And one of them was there was about a half or a sentence that said rumor in D.C. was the government might mandate higher ethanol usage in gasoline. And the other one was Mexico tendered for some corn overnight. And, you know, those two things, you know, that ethanol could be huge. And, you know, I think the corn got the ball rolling this morning, and the funds were buyers, commission houses were buyers, speculators were buyers. And, you know, when they got corn up, broke through the contract highs in the March corn, then technically, you know, technically that makes a huge, very strong market. And, you know, it just kept rolling and spilled over in the beans and in the wheat. And, of course, in the wheat, they're concerned a little bit about, you know, the dry weather in South America and to some extent the corn also. And, you know, it just spilled over and the ball ran. And, you know, it looks like to me that, you know, they may back off tonight or tomorrow a little bit after this be some profit taking. But, you know, it looks like to me that the jam beans are going to make at least one more salt on $11.
Well, John, we appreciate you being with us today.
Hey, I enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, you too. John Hester filling in for Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, joining us on this Tuesday afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Well, a snow advisory has been issued for the following areas in northwestern Illinois until from 3 to 6 this evening, 3 this afternoon until 6 tomorrow morning. Much of north central and northeastern Illinois and extreme northwestern Indiana through 6 a.m. tomorrow, and far northeastern Illinois, including Chicago, from 12 noon today to 12 noon tomorrow. Most of northern Indiana from 5 Eastern time to 1 Eastern time tomorrow, and most of central Indiana from 10 Eastern time through 6 Eastern time tomorrow. Southeastern Indiana from 7 Eastern time tonight through 4 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow. A snow advisory been issued for those areas. Time now to take a look at the agricultural news. Here's Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad says lawmakers are considering a plan that would limit Senate Farm Bill amendments to 15. 10 offered by Republicans and 5 by Democrats. The GOP would also be able to offer 2 amendments that are not germane to the Farm Bill. Conrad says if Republicans would choose to make their non-germane amendments a fix in the alternative minimum tax and a repeal of the estate tax, he would not object. Conrad says the proposal would also allow the Senate to take up 2 additional amendments that would not count toward Democrat or Republican totals. The alternative Farm Bill amendment proposed by Indiana Senator Richard Lugar and the $250,000 farm subsidy cap proposed by Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. The White House yesterday threatened to veto Democrat-offered energy bill compromise legislation. The White House is opposed to provisions in the legislation that would require utilities to get 15% of their electricity from renewable sources by 2020 and raises taxes on oil and natural gas companies. A Nebraska biofuels company has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. E3 Biofuels Genesis is seeking reorganization and a plan to pay off $3.3 million it owes up to 1,000 creditors. The Chapter 11 is for the company's Meade, Nebraska closed-loop facility, which has been plagued by a number of construction-related issues, including explosion of one of the plant's boilers during startup. CME Group and industry executives say they will hold an open forum today to consider raising price limits for corn and soybeans, raising storage charges, and changing the futures delivery process. The market has been plagued by major aberrations during futures delivery periods in which cash and future prices struggle to converge. That is, when futures reflect the cash value of corn or soybeans at the futures delivery points. Chicago grain traders also plan to discuss the proposed increase in speculative position limits now under review with the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The European Union says it will resume pork export subsidies to all destinations outside the EU. The subsidies amount to about $27.70 a hundredweight and include both fresh and frozen pork, as well as pork products at lower rates. EU officials say the export subsidies are needed to compensate for high feed costs. The decision was supported by most EU member states, except for Denmark, Sweden, and Italy. USDA has raised its forecast for the fiscal year 2008 agricultural trade surplus to $15.5 billion. That's a $7 billion jump from its August estimate. USDA says the increase is due to continued strong demand, sharply higher prices for grains and oilseeds, and a weaker dollar. USDA says wheat producers will not receive partial 2007 crop year countercyclical payments due to high prices. Any partial payments for producers with corn or soybean-based acres will be announced as early as next March 1st. And Acting USDA Secretary Chuck Connor has approved the final plan to consolidate Farm Service Agency offices in Indiana. The plan provides for 9 county FSA offices to be consolidated with an adjacent county office. Affected Hoosier farmers now have the choice to select an alternative county office where they would like to conduct their FSA business. Producers will have 60 days to notify their local FSA office of their selection. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, and next week of the 2007 Illinois Farm Economic Summits. They're scheduled for Effingham on Tuesday, Bloomington on Wednesday, and Sycamore on Thursday. If you have not signed up yet, this is your last day to pre-register online at the FarmDoc website. It's farmdoc.uiuc.edu. The cost is $55. If you wait, it'll be $55. You can still walk in at the door at each of those three events. They kick off at 8 o'clock in the morning when Darrell Good, Ag Economist, will take a look at the commodity markets and talk about prices. That'll be followed up by a discussion of the revenue implications of the new farm bill, how weather and technology in corn and soybean yields have been influenced in the last few years, what the impact of ethanol on crop and livestock sectors in the state might be, and how crop production cost and rotation decisions should be looked at in the coming year. It'll wrap up in the afternoon with a look at how farm lease trends and strategies have changed over the last decade. And then with a visionary look at farm profitability through 2010, you can find all the information on the FarmDoc website. Sign up. Visit farmdoc.uiuc.edu. I'll host the first two programs in Effingham and Bloomington. And then the Ag Economist will make their way to Sycamore without me because I'll stay in Bloomington at the Interstate Center, where I'll be on a program called IT for Ag. It's all about handhelds and how the digital world is creeping into the agricultural world. I'll be busy next week. Hope to see you on the road. Dave Dickey will handle things right here at the radio station. My thanks in advance to him.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time now to take a look at the energy markets as we do each and every Tuesday. Today, Harry Cooney of GrowMark joins us from his Bloomington office. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Kind of an
active day in the energy complex here today, ahead of the OPEC meeting coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, the market sold off already about $10 in crude oil, and since it topped out around $99, just shy of the $100 mark, we've had a 10% correction here now. And just ahead of the OPEC meeting, it dropped another dollar down to 88 here now. And the feeling going into tomorrow's OPEC meeting is that the members will likely leave output unchanged or maybe raise production by as much as 750,000 barrels a day.
And would that push the market back higher then?
Well, it's interesting because back, I think, at the last major OPEC meeting in September, they raised output, and the market still went up. So I don't know this time. I'm kind of thinking they may just leave output unchanged, given the fact that the market has sold off so much here. If the market was still up around $100, then I think it would probably be more of a sure bet or an output increase, but I think maybe they'll just try to leave output unchanged, and the charts here are suggesting that maybe this thing can soften a little bit more in here. So whether it closes higher or lower tomorrow is unknown, but we're still kind of in the sell-off mode following that big peak around $100.
Now, why would you say the charts are suggesting that? What do you see?
Well, we've taken out some recent lows. For example, if you look at the crude oil market, we kept honoring previous reaction lows on the charts, and some of this is real technical, but here in the last week or so, we took out the last reaction low, which was around $91 a barrel. That was a low from early November. We've taken it out on the downside now. We've traded under it, and usually when you do that, you're starting to have, instead of higher highs and higher lows, which is an uptrend, you're starting to have some lower lows. So it puts traders on the defensive here just in the very near term, and today we closed under the long-term, some long-term moving averages that we haven't done in the past couple of months also. So it suggests that whatever comes out of OPEC, the market may want to try to soften here over the next couple of weeks and maybe give us a little early Christmas present.
I was making note that the moving average is below the 10 and the 20 for quite some time, this week anyway.
Sure.
But made it below the 50-day moving average today and I guess yesterday.
That's right. And that's kind of exciting for those of us that watch charts. And of course, we're trying to get this market to come down even more so we can get ready to do some contracting for 2008. And so this might be opening up a little bit of a window of opportunity over the next month or so here for us to do some contracting.
So we're looking at a drop maybe to what? I think I see a retracement level down to 86 or thereabouts at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, we're hoping for something in the low to mid-80s here in the very near term or the next month or two here, and hopefully we get to that level by mid-January or so here. That's what we're kind of hoping for.
Okay, anything else to add before I let you go?
Well, I don't think so. I guess the main thing we'll be watching here is this OPEC meeting and get through that and then see if we can have a more of a sell-off.
All right, thanks much, Harry.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney is with GrowMark, and he joins us from his Bloomington office on Tuesdays, along with a couple of other analysts. It's part of our expanding coverage of the agricultural and energy world. Each and every Tuesday, we take a look at the energy markets right here on the Closing Mark Report. In 2 minutes, Don Day will join us with a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. House Republican leader Tom Cross acknowledges it could take until January to work out a gambling expansion plan in Illinois that would pay for a statewide construction program and pave the way for a mass transit bailout. Cross says he'd like something to happen next week, but he can't promise anything will. He blames the political climate and personalities involved. House Speaker Michael Madigan didn't attend a second day of meetings with Governor Rod Blagojevich and the three other legislative leaders. The meetings were set to break a logjam that has transit riders in the Chicago area facing threatened service cuts and fare increases. An email from Madigan spokesman Steve Brown says no invitation was extended. Blagojevich spokeswoman Abby Ottenhoff says leaders' meetings are for all legislative leaders. Indiana's Senate Tax and Fiscal Policy Committee begins its work on property tax reform today with a hearing on three Senate bills. The House Ways and Means Committee, meanwhile, held a hearing yesterday on Governor Mitch Daniels' tax plan. That hearing stretched into the evening as taxpayers and interest groups testified. A monthly gauge of the Illinois economy shows another month of slowdown. But the economist who authors the University of Illinois Flash Index says though the index has fallen since April, it still shows economic growth as a whole in the state. He says that's an assurance that Illinois is not immediately falling into recession. As the U of I ramps up its new global campus, another online course is taking shape elsewhere on the Urbana campus. The Institute of Labor and Industrial Relations is making three courses available on the Internet. Its dean says more than 100 people have signed up for those courses. The undergraduate classes are aimed at people in the workforce who may not have the time or schedule to attend classes in person. The Veterans Affairs Department is getting ready to release a review of a VA hospital in southern Illinois where questions have been raised about the deaths of 10 patients. David Day of the VA's Office of the Inspector General says the report will lay out various issues at the Marion VA, though he isn't elaborating. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
It's been a little bit cold, but I guess it's going to get warmer at some point this week.
It is, but do look for some colder weather this weekend. In fact, we may see a pattern that will be very similar to what happened this past weekend repeat itself in the Midwest, especially the upper and northwest areas of the Midwest and western Corn Belt this weekend with another cold, unsettled system coming out of the Rockies.
And then if you look a little farther, how do we look as we head deeper into December?
Well, it looks like the cold, stormy weather is going to be hung up out west. The Pacific Northwest, the Northern Plains, and the Northern Rockies will have the most unsettled, coldest, snowiest, stormiest weather, with the western and northern sections of the Corn Belt getting into that action. So there's going to be some cooler, unsettled weather coming on in. We're going to see the warmest, driest weather in the southeast United States where they don't need it. Places like Georgia, the southeast United States is going to be the warmest areas. I think the pattern that we have now is going to be what we're going to see for most of the month.
Overcast skies, if we go to the southern hemisphere, are expected this week. Maybe a little bit of rainfall?
Yeah, definitely. Brazil looking wet, northern Argentina as well. I think central and southern Argentina growing areas might not see as much, but Brazil stands a very good chance of picking up some moisture.
Temperatures in the 80s only? Looks like pretty good growing conditions.
Very
actually.
Good growing conditions. In fact, temperatures are forecasted to be just a little below normal in the southern hemisphere, at least in the area around South America. That is typical. When you get a wetter weather pattern, you can expect it to be a little bit cooler than normal.
If we check in on the winter wheat crop, not only here, but in Ukraine and parts of Europe, what do you see?
Well, first of all, for here, I do have some good news for folks in Oklahoma, Kansas, and maybe even Texas. They're going to be getting some precipitation out of some of the storminess here over the next week to 10 days. Over in the Ukraine, well, their forecast is a good chance of moisture in the Ukraine, at least here in the next 4 to 5 days, drying out a little bit thereafter. Northern and western sections of Europe have some stormy and wet weather on tap.
Any place else that we ought to check in on before I let you go for the day?
Well, let's go down under, check in Australia. They've got some chances for some moisture in some of the central, southern, and eastern areas.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's market. And that you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Just go to willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.